Welcome to ClickFunnels Radio, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here's your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey everyone, let me introduce you to Lucas Rubix. He is the host of the Coach's Corner podcast. It's a top 50 marketing entrepreneurship podcast in the US, Canada, and the UK. You can actually find it at lucasrubix.com/podcast, or just go to lucasrubix.com and you get all of his resources there. The show is completely dedicated to helping coaches turn their knowledge, gifts, and their life story into a successful online coaching business that actually makes them money. And one of the main things Lucas and I are going to be covering today is really how to take your passion and your expert knowledge and either create a coaching program, but most importantly, make sure that it's authentic to who you are, how to scale, how to grow it. And again, this ties in a ton with some of the things that Russell's already taught inside of Expert Secrets. So you see it, it's very congruent to that. I think you're going to have a ton of fun listening to the podcast and get a lot of value out of it. So grab a pen and paper, take some notes, and let's have fun. Lucas, welcome to the show.
Appreciate that. To give credit where credit is due, Expert Secrets is, if you're trying to build a coaching business or sell a service, a foundational book. I remember reading that and just my mind kept getting blown over and over. A lot of this stuff I was teaching, but picked up so much of it. So yeah, a lot of the stuff that I've learned has been through you guys' platform. So it's amazing.
Awesome. Well, Lucas, let's kind of dive into this whole idea as far as how does, you know, a person... We were talking offline here about when you first got started, you had this opportunity and you just felt extremely passionate about helping other people. I kind of grew up or at least started off in the oil wells and the oil fields and things. And now all of a sudden you find yourself running a very, very successful coaching business, helping others get their content out to the world. What are some of the things that you found as you built this that would be important to our listeners when it comes down to authenticity and trying to grow and scale their business?
So when I was on the oil rig, so my story, I hid it for a long time. I'm like, well, I'm not educated. I barely finished high school. I went working on the oil fields for 5 years, like driving trucks and shooting shotguns. Has nothing to do with business. I grew up in a loving family, as in maybe we didn't have much, but my mom and dad, every Friday, my dad would come, they'd go on a date, bring her flowers. So I knew my world. Grew up in a trailer park, but I knew my world of like my reality. When I went on the rigs, I'm watching like grown men call their wives, put the children to bed, put the phone down, and then go to the bars or, I mean, I hope I can say this, it's just the truth, but like get prostitutes. It was just a whole different world for me. And I'm just like, whoa, like this exists. It just felt so wrong for 5 years. I just knew I'm not supposed to be there. Luckily I didn't fall into those addictions, but at the end of that career, prescription medication, Percocets, Oxys was an everyday reality just to numb the pain for me. Finally, when I had my moment of this is not my path, I was sitting around a circle of guys smoking cigarettes and everyone's complaining about their wife, their life. These are 40, 50 year old guys, right? They're complaining about it. It was a very male dominated industry. And I was like, I was 25 or something. I'm like, I have a choice right now. Like I either go down that path and hopefully, you know, I'll have money, I'll have a big house and I'll have a good retirement fund, but I'll be miserable. Or I pull the plug. I'm 25. Not a big deal. I didn't have much to lose. So I, of course, you know, there's the whole idea of the outlier. I didn't have that much to lose. And I just jumped in. I did lose the house that I bought, did lose the cars because I didn't know how to run a business, but I was so happy. Even the bank, like having to sell my house and getting rid of the cars, I was so happy waking up every day because I was chasing something. And I realized like money is not everything. So I was ashamed of sharing that story. And there's more to this story because I was like, well, who's going to take me seriously in my business? My first business was a fitness business. And I struggled until I started sharing that story. And I started attracting clients who were like trying to make a change in their life and trying to progress and trying to better themselves. And I started attracting more deeper conversations that eventually led into coaching. So from early on, I was like, yo, share your story. And then when I moved into the business space, this is 3 or 4 years after the first business, I stopped sharing that story because I'm like, well, I'm not educated. I don't have any certifications. Like who is going to listen to me? And it was a really great reminder to wait, share the story again, go even deeper. And again, the success slowly followed, as in connection with clients, connection with prospects. I didn't have to sell anymore. They were just connected to come into my world because they resonated with my story. And I didn't have to wear the suit and the tie. I did that for a while. I tried being someone I'm not. I bought the blacked out BMW. Now I have a pickup truck and 3 dirt bikes. That is my life. And that's my definition of success. And I just stopped trying to be someone I'm not. And I love my business and I don't feel trapped by it, if that makes sense. So that's the biggest thing I learned. That hopefully that's a little bit takeaway, but like, or tangible, but just share your story in all of it. Like even the bad stuff, because people relate with that. If you're trying to be an influencer, trying to be perfect, people don't relate to that anymore. Maybe that worked 5-6 years ago, but I think today in the coaching space, at least they don't want perfect.
No, I totally appreciate that. And I appreciate your sharing that. I know, Lucas, it's kind of mentioned as far as, you know, what point do you actually share that story? I know Bernie Brown talks about this whole idea of the concept of sharing the scar more so than the open wound.
Right.
But at the same time, it's important that you actually document the wound itself, and that documentation of that wound sometimes is, I was talking with Natalie Hodson about it. And one of the things she was going through was a lot of this pain and frustration where she's decided she videos herself in the moment going through the pain, saves that video, knowing that eventually she's going to work through it, but she wants to be able to capture her actual true essence and the authentic pain that she had during that period of time. And so she does that to keep it for herself. And then once that wound begins to heal and the scar is there, she then can go back and actually use that content to be extremely authentic, to go out, as you made mention, it resonates with people who actually, they are going through that pain and they want to know that they would love to follow you. They want to coach with you. They understand where you're at, but they also want to make sure that you understand where they're at. And
yeah, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. If you're always in a victim mode and projecting something out on social, I'll call my clients out on this. They'll project a complaint about the government or politics. And I get it. Like you have your views and you have your stuff, but the way you position it, is important. And also if you're going through it right now, you might have to pick and choose. If you don't have to show up to be perfect. I woke up this morning in a massive scarcity mindset because I made the biggest mistake ever. And I picked up my phone first thing and I had a few emails with bad news. I almost never do that. Today I did. And I just like, oh, and then I started getting all flustered and started emailing and the team. I'm just like, okay. And then I was like, wait, let me practice what I preach is every time a client is in a scarcity mindset. Yeah, we can work on all this stuff. Or the first thing we can do is just give. If it's $10, $25, $250, just give. If you feel scarcity on time, put an hour aside in the day and just give it to someone. Go talk to a homeless person, whatever. Put the time aside, gave, instantly felt better. And then I went on social media and shared it. So if I woke up and I was like, yo, my day sucks and this is the bad news I got, bad move. No one's going to want to work with me. But if you can bring the story to an end and show, you know, the victory over that, it's a great piece of content.
I appreciate that. And I think, one of the things you made mention there is I know you publish on a regular basis. You've got your podcast, as you made mention. You're also on Facebook and Instagram. When you look at from a coaching perspective, and you're as a coach, I think it's extremely important that you're obviously out there publishing. Again, we're publishing right now on a podcast. Mm. I do a lot on Facebook Live. I do a lot on Instagram as well. What are some of the tips that you've seen when you're publishing that help? It's authentic, but also helps attract people to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's this fine line between making something. So I have a background in acting and I love scripts. I love storytelling. And there's an element to storytelling where I'm going to use the word embellish. Because I think if we're real, like when you're in the moment through a problem and you actually live it moment to moment, it's not as bad as when you're thinking about the problem. So if we're just like, I mean, our minds play tricks on us, but when you're actually going through something and then look back at it, no matter how scary it was, how dark the room was, when you turn the light switch on, it wasn't actually as bad as you thought it was. And so when you're sharing these stories and when you're sharing the content, I do like to weave in some storytelling, not make stuff up, but as a marketer and as a storyteller, you may want to embellish and have some fun with it. So like, do I embellish slightly the story of where I'm sitting in a circle smoking a cigarette? And just had this massive epiphany of like, I have a decision to make now. I either stay here and show up like them. It's true. Did it happen exactly like that? No, I pretty much probably went back to my bed and laid there and been like, ah, is this really what I want? It was probably a few day or a few week process, but that's not that fun to tell. So a little bit of embellishment while staying authentic to the real information, at least in my opinion, is something that I do. And there's been times in my career where I totally push the envelope and then it feels wrong. You're just like, I'm now not aligned, not authentic. And then there's times where you fall flat and you kind of make it too boring and no one seems to care when there's a real message to it. So wrap it up in something exciting. Storytell. Like if you have a favorite movie, study it or study movies and the way they build up that suspense to that moment. And then the hero has that final decision to make and then he does it and you're on the edge of your seat. Try that. Model that for sure.
No, I appreciate that. It goes back again, kind of to that hero's two journeys, where the journey of achievement and the journey of transformation. Obviously you're sitting in that circle and it is more about the journey of transformation of getting out of that circle. And that's what people resonate with. I'd like to kind of shift gears on us here and really focus. A lot of people, you've got a coaching program that basically helps coaches, Coach's Corner, coachescorner.com, where it allows people to actually get their coaching programs up and running. Yeah. And one of the things we were talking about earlier was this whole idea of how do you build a coaching program that people actually want to buy? And I'm kind of curious as far as there's a lot of coaching programs out there and people get frustrated saying, well, I can't sell it. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
because people don't want to buy it. So I'm really curious as far as how do you create a coaching program that people actually want to buy?
Yeah, the ego is strong. The ego is strong. We will think that we created something beautiful and amazing because we got so much passion in it. And then we put it out there and everyone's like, cool, but they don't actually take it. And it's kind of like Einstein's whole quote of insanity. But if you keep trying to sell a product that the marketplace doesn't want, you'll either have a breakthrough in 50 years and change the whole industry, but you'll be a martyr with arrows in your back. And you'll lead the way to a future, or you can just see what's working and ease your way into it. And by listening. So I was the guy who was always pushing out content, especially in the fitness days of like, you need this, you need this. I was so passionate about body and energy because I knew what an abundant amount of energy can do for your life. And so I was pushing out all of this stuff thinking that, well, people want to be more successful. They want more energy. So they're going to want to work out and I'm going to write them these beautiful workouts and it's going to be so technical and they're going to learn about everything about the body. And my first program was a 30-day program that wasn't a workout program. There was a workout to it, but I was teaching people to be their own trainer. I thought it was this genius idea that you'll learn to be your own personal trainer and you won't need to buy a personal trainer. I think like one or two people bought it for like $47 and one person returned it. And that's when I realized people don't want that. They want to hang out with me for 20, 30 minutes. They want to feel really good about themselves when they're done. And I don't know who taught me this, but make it their second place of worship. So if you're working with a client, that space that you hold with a client, like no matter what you have to do, make them smile and feel better than they were when they entered the session because they're going to be dying to come back to it. It's like their second place of worship, their second home, and they can't wait. So if you have a gym, create the music and the atmosphere for them to can't wait to get away from the family and the workplace and just go and spend an hour for themselves. Same within a Zoom coaching session, like make it so memorable and exciting. And so I started thinking about, okay, let me listen to people and just ask what it is they want. And so when we have a client, we push conversations. So not sales pages to an order form, but any way they can to get on a Zoom call to have a conversation. And we almost want to hear, no, I'm not interested. And then we push hard, like get over your fears of rejection. Why do you not want it? Why are you not interested in it? What would make you interested in it? And they'll tell you right there. And usually it's the most simplistic stuff. As an expert, you're going to be like, but that's so obvious. But they're not the expert in this situation. And they don't know everything you know. And they just give them what they want. And then later on, feed them what they need. Kind of like wrapping vegetables within a sugar sandwich and just giving it to someone, like ease into it. And I know I'm extremely passionate about performance coaching and the online space and all that stuff, that I make this mistake too, is I go on a live and just start giving truth bombs. And then I wonder why everyone's kind of like, cool. But if I do a live about how to make $2,500 or how to adapt a better money mindset or the basics to get people going, you can build massive engagement, you get clients from it, and then you can really start feeding them the stuff they want. So don't let the ego get bruised, and rejection is a beautiful thing because it's leading you towards, well, the goal or the result, and just ask why. Why are people not buying? And if you don't know, interview them and just let the ego go and eventually get to the answer quicker if that answers the question.
Yeah, so tell me a little more on that. When you're, take for example, for your coaches, what's your typical client? what type of coaching programs are they creating? Again, is it a fitness coaching program? Is it a coaching program, personal development? Is it, what are some, give me some ideas as far as what are your current clients, the industries they're in, and how much are they typically charging?
Sweet. So it used to be fitness clients, because I, that whole, this whole entire business started by two people in Vancouver. I was running maybe $10,000 of ads in a city of about 1 million people at the end of my fitness career. And I was doing it in person at the time. And at 10,000 people, I was pretty much reaching everyone at some point throughout the month. And so eventually I'd be walking down the street. People were like, oh, you're that fitness guy. Hey, you're the fitness guy. Even on a flight. And I just, my ego was always lit up. I'm just like, whoa, I'm like famous or something. And I had a few trainers just in Vancouver who used to hate me, but then they got smarter and were like, why? Like, you've only been here 6 months in this city and you're taking it over by storm. Can you teach me? So I started teaching fitness coaches. It started with gyms and in-person stuff. I was like consulting with gyms, led into trainers, led into online stuff. And then eventually now we're like life coaches, personal development stuff, relationship coaches, health and fitness coaches, still nutrition coaches. So the whole lot of it. And their story, like, we need coaches who know their craft. We don't teach the craft of coaching because there's so many modalities and I'm not the world's greatest coach in every modality. I have my own style and I'm constantly trying to master it. But nutrition, don't know much about. Personal development in different spaces, don't know much about. Read the books, I'm not the expert there. So, but the storytelling and the marketing and the building an audience and the making an awesome offer and testing that offer is really universal to any coach. And in terms of what they charge, I like to always go one-on-one first. And so we have sort of what are you worth per hour? Because I can't tell you to charge $5,000 if you don't believe that you're worth $5,000. And you're always going to stumble it in a sales call, or you're going to, there's going to be some thing, whether it's an eye wink or something you do that the other person's going to catch on and be like, huh, something's off. So we always go with, what are you worth per hour? Like, actually worth per hour. Do you feel like you're worth $20 an hour? Because if that's what you feel you're worth, we need to either change that narrative. But if we can't, we're going to charge $20 an hour for your first client. It's fine. And if you're going to work with clients for 8 hours over a 2 month period, plus 3 hours of back end work, let's just make a really simple equation, find out what that is. Great. That's $500. That's what you're going to charge because you believe it. And I guarantee you, after working with your first client, you're going to be like, whoa, like they love me. And I think I'm worth $50 an hour. And we increase the prices. So with one-on-one, you don't even need to post your prices. Just get into a conversation, figure out what they want. And so I used to make the mistake of like, you have to charge $2,500 or you can't have a profitable business. And then I'd listen to the one-on-one sales calls. And I was like, why'd you like not make the offer? Or why'd you stumble when you made the offer? Why'd you not handle that objection? And it was always down to the belief of I wasn't worth it. So I'm careful to just tell someone what they're worth because that's such a personal exploration. And then I know other people who are like, I'm worth $10,000 an hour. Like, they know that. And so they will not speak for anything under $50,000. And they're there. We're not there yet, but they're there. And so you gotta own it, but you gotta know your worth.
Yeah, I appreciate that. As you take a look, so are most of your coaches then doing one-on-one coaching?
Yeah, 100%. We have different tiers and later on we can work on group coaching, but I'm kind of like, group coaching is a whole different beast. You better be good at what you do and you better know what the collective want. And until you've worked with 8 or 10, my opinion, of course, this is not truth, not Bible, just my experience. It's hard to facilitate change for 10 people when you can't know what's coming up for them. But if you've worked with 10 or 15 or 20 one-on-ones, it's fairly easy to just take all the content, turn it into a course or a program and sell it. There's many successful course creators who just launch a course first time, but just from experience, you got to get good at what you're doing.
Yeah.
I would say for alignment purposes too.
I totally agree. I remember, gosh, many times working for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally just to get that first client because I didn't know what I was worth. Even from a consulting standpoint, I'm like, you know what? I would rather make sure you have some wins first and then we can talk about payment later.
100%. 100%.
Just getting those, again, it's confidence building.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of curious when you start, when you look at coaches and they're trying to build that up, are they taking their own sales calls? And at what point do they transition to have someone else do their sales calls?
Yeah. So I don't teach. We have, we have the basic anatomy of a sales call. My approach and my philosophy was always like, if your marketing doesn't do all the convincing and persuading, by the time you get on the call and you have to, as a coach opinion here, push and use tactics to sell someone, you're starting a pretty intimate relationship that if you can NLP them on the call and get them really excited, and then they regret it 3 days later, but they have to have a coaching call with you on Friday, and then on Friday, and now they're kind of like, why did I join this? And you use some trickery, and I'm guilty of this in my early days. It generally leads to a mess. So I love like educating people on the entire thing, even a 25-minute video before the sales call that fully educates them on what they can expect. I believe it's Russell. I think I use this example because he was speaking on stages, but he was always getting varied results for his sales because of how he was being introduced. And then when, I believe this is from one of the books, but then when he made a presentation that always primed the audience in the proper frame, he always kind of made consistent sales. I might be off on that, but I believe that was from one of those things there. So I use that same approach. Is like, make a presentation. It doesn't have to be a webinar, but even a 20-minute or 15-minute thing where they watch it, it's always the same. No matter what your mood is, they're getting that same energy from you. They're primed. And now they know exactly what to expect. So the sales call is like enjoyable because I dislike sales calls. So I want it to be an enjoyable exploration into what we can do. We take all our sales calls, so I can't speak for having a sales team. I've never had a sales team. And 90% of what we sell is not through a call. They have an option to book a call, but our marketing does most of the work through the podcast and through how well they think they know us, that they can buy straight off the page. And we sell $2,500 items without calls. But if they want to explore, we'll do a call. So I'm not the best guy to talk about team and scaling that part of it. But our coaches that we train or that we help take their own calls. And I guess if they wanted to outsource it, they'd talk to another expert for that. But yeah.
It goes back to, you know, Peter Drucker's quote, you know, when marketing does its job right, sales becomes unnecessary.
Yeah. And yeah.
I think especially for a lot of these coaches, it's really tough when you're the coach and you're having to hard sell someone, because you're right, it's an intimate relationship. And I believe, as you made mention, you know, Lucas, when they come in, they want to know that if you're the one delivering, there still has to be the guru on the hill type of approach. And there has to be some distance there. And so I've seen the same thing happen. The more successful you can get on the marketing side, so that when you're actually having those conversations, it's literally, if you're having to have a final closing call, it's just more a matter of, you know, which card do you want? Visa, MasterCard, American Express, versus sitting there saying, well, let me tell you why you need me. If you're having to sell them, it just changes the dynamic, especially for a coach. And so I'm a huge believer is what you said. And again, whether it's through a perfect webinar, whether it's through a VSL or whatever type of sales copy you want, I think that it's important when you're going to be the coach that you position yourself. And again, it goes back to the pre-framing you made mention of, where once that pre-framing is done right, they literally are just dying to meet with you. And that's super critical.
Yeah, you got a little positioning in there. And then I think it comes down to that enticing storytelling of, I think some coaches feel guilty for like embellishing or, you know, really embellishing the results. But whatever is authentic to you, some people I think push this way too far. But if you look at a shampoo bottle, it's perfect hair. If you look at I'm looking at Lucas Motor Oil because I just got a new motorcycle. I'm doing an oil change to go ripping tomorrow. And it's a beautiful bottle and it's telling me more horsepower. Like I'm going to have more performance. Like dude, it's BS. It's Lucas Oil. It has my name on it, which is probably why I bought it. So there's just a fine line to that. But if you can excite them for the possibilities, we always have a waiver they sign of like, this is going to be hard work. We're embellishing. The possibilities are infinite. I truly believe that. I hope you are more successful than I am as quickly as possible, but it's going to take work. And if you can commit to the work, whether it takes you a month, 12 months, or 12 years, you'll get there. Infinite possibilities, but you've got to be willing to do the work. And so it's a really fine line. I've struggled with that in my marketing, especially in the making money space. It gets so, the competition is promising you're going to make 25K and you don't. And then on a call, people are telling you, but their program promises you 25K. And so instead of trying to battle it with like, yeah, but like trying to battle it head on, which I've tried before, it's like, okay, we need a different tactic and get more real with the person and connect more with like, just discredit that authentically in a way. So it's always a game of what is the threshold and what's authentic. I've made mistakes and I've taken it too far before, and I've not pushed it hard enough where people are going to another program that they're going to think they're going to make $1 million and they're massively disappointed. So it's just dude, it's tweaking for the rest of my life. I'm prepped to.
I totally agree with that. I mean, that's sales and marketing and business.
Yeah. Yeah.
For most of your students and other and the coaches, how long are most of their coaching engagements? Is this, are they selling a 6-month coaching program? Is it ongoing? Is it a finite time? What do you find seems to work for best for a lot of your coaches?
All right. So it would be not to evade the question because I won't, but it would really be dependent on what's the result they're selling. You don't want to. So in fitness, you know, if a client got a result in 3-4 months, they wanted to lose 25 pounds and I knew it would take 3 or 4 months ish with the work, I'd sell them a 3 or 4 month package. Oftentimes if you over deliver, I'd have what did I call it? They could work month to month, a maintenance package. And if you generally do your job really well and you build a connection, a friendship, they're going to want to keep coming back. But there was times in my career where I knew I was selling someone something they didn't need anymore. But, well, I need money. I need yeah. blood into my business. So like, well, like, is this really inauthentic or is this real? So I think it's dependent on like what result is your client looking for? If the result is going to take 12 months to get, and you know it's going to take 12 months, if you sell them anything but 12 months, if you sell them 3 months to make a quick exchange, you're doing them a disservice. You're it's not a long-term business strategy. If you have a 12-month package, but you tell them the result's going to take 12 months, but I work in 3-month chunks to make sure you're getting value, awesome. And if you know the result is like some NLP work on very specific kind of relationships, something where they can't attract the perfect person, but they've got so much stuff they want to pull up, and you know that you can make a change for them in 2 months, then you better sell them a 2-month and frame them already that you have a maintenance package and you work with your clients for years because you deliver results. But all they need right now is 2 months. They'll love you for it. I literally just tried to talk someone out of a sale yesterday. So I was like, I don't think you need this. We're launching the business classified type of thing. I'm like, I don't think you need this because this is, you're going to be seeing $50,000, $70,000, $80,000 a month strategies. You don't need this. But they were so adamant about, if I see it, I'll believe it and it'll inspire me. And I told them, I'm like, I don't think you need this. And they're like, I want to do it. I want to do it. And I'm like, cool. So sometimes when you're really real and you're not giving people the answer that you think they want, but you're just giving them the truth, it builds trust. It's like if a car salesman tells you, you don't need this car, it's actually too much, you might want this lower model, I'm going to be like, dude, like now I want this even more. give me the Corvette, like the full done out one. I need that.
I appreciate that a ton. Well, Lucas, as we kind of get close wrapping things up here, anything else you want to let our audience know about?
Oh man, I'm getting all fired up about this whole subconscious thing, just because this morning I had an NLP or a hypnotherapist reach out, which is funny because it's in alignment with what I went through this morning. And they were like talking about, preaching about, abundance and your subconscious and what you're feeding it is going to create it. And they're experts in this, but they have no money. Like they're complaining about money all the time. And I don't mind calling people out. And I'm like, yo, like you're an expert here. Why? Like you've expressed interest in buying from us, but you never have money. They got a little upset, but I think people need the truth and really get aligned. Like do not put a label or a layer of gratitude to hide reality. Be grateful. Man, if you're watching this podcast, you're in the top 5% of the world. Like the world's living on what, $2 or $3 a day? Like, isn't that most of the world's in that? You have an abundance already for life. Everything you need, the energy, the health, you have it. Nothing wrong with wanting more. But if you've got blocks and internal blocks and you're trying to start a coaching business and you are ignoring the very thing that as a coach you should be exploring on a daily, and you think you can trick the world in selling something that you're not constantly mastering. Don't have to be perfect. I'm far from perfect, but constantly mastering. And like if you say you take a cold shower every morning and you present it to the world, but you actually like go in there for 10 seconds and then turn it off because no one's going to know, but you're coming off as this stoic example of what a leader is. Dude, that's going to come out in so many different ways. And so I'm so huge on just the personal growth that it takes. If you're a coach, I'm telling you, like you're dedicating your life to a service that is not an easy career path, I don't think. Like you're constantly going to be working on yourself, depending what kind of coach you are, of course. So really commit to that and just make sure you're constantly focused on alignment and developing your skills and your abilities and your mindset, because the more valuable you become, clients will be dying to work with you because they sense some level of confidence or something about you that they don't even know, but you've become the person who can lead. But if like the blind are trying to lead the blind, which is happening a lot, I'm like, man, like that sucks. Like there's more to life than just faking it type of thing. So
I appreciate it. Well, Lucas, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
So where can people reach out to find more out about you guys?
LucasRoots.com. I actually gave up Instagram. I'll post stories, but I'm like, this Instagram game I don't resonate with. So LucasRoots.com. We post all the podcasts and anything that's actually valuable there. You'll find links to it. We have a Facebook group of 7,000, I think, online coaches right now. And it's like a support community. It's awesome. We go live once a week there and just spread the truth. And LucasRoots.com. Check that out.
All right, bud. We'll talk soon. Thanks,
brother.